Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm co-host Jeannie Rice, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Friday, April the 4th. I'm hearing an echo. And our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Today is Aramaic Friday. I don't see Dale yet on the switchboard, so we will talk for a little while until he gets in. The work that we do is on Aramaic forgiveness, and every Friday we have Dale with us to discuss questions around the Aramaic, and we're blessed and honored to have him there. I see Dr. Tim and Michelle are both with us, and we welcome you to the show as well. And Michael, you are on.
Thank you, dear heart. It's another awesome day. We're in Lost Wages, Nevada. Interesting place to be. Interesting to see the amount of money that has been taken from the pockets of America to build monuments in Las Vegas. It's an interesting game. And of course, we're here to help. You know, one of the things we see is people with all kinds of addictions. In fact, there's one gentleman who, when he came to Heartland, had knocked down and destroyed several businesses that he had owned because of his gambling addiction. He spent a summer at Heartland and then back and forth with shops for a period of about 6 months before he beat a 25-year addiction to gambling, and now has one of the largest stores, as I understand it, on Amazon, as a result of being able to let loose of his gambling addiction and actually take his ability to make money and actually be able to keep it to build something. So it's pretty cool to watch how people overcome those addictions, whether it's drugs or alcohol, you know, any form of addiction is simply a cover for pain. And when one has the tools with which to work through their pain, guess what happens? Their pain disappears. There is no place on the planet that I have seen a consistent, persistent way to remove the root of pain than through what was taught by the Aramaic Yeshua 2,000 years ago. There are many people who have totally and completely thrown out and blown off what he taught because they've listened to Greek renditions of his words, and Greek renditions of his words are a pale, pale, pale shadow of what he actually taught. So what we're here to do is to bring light to eradicate that shadow and bring to the world the actual truth of what he spoke. And what he spoke is just so awesome in its understanding of physics, of physiology, of psychology, of genetics. It's light years beyond anything the world has done today. And so we are here to bring that forward, and today being Aramaic Fridays, we have the blessing of Dale Hoffman with us. And Dr. Tim, I understand, is perhaps back from jury duty. Are you with us, Dr. Tim?
I am here.
Oh, cool. Finished with jury duty?
Well, it's going to be Wednesday and Thursday all month long.
Oh, really? Interesting. Interesting.
So it's not a pay
period. Well, anything to share with us from, you know, we missed your voice the last couple of days. Anything to share with us before we invite Dale to step up to the plate?
Well, I'd say I've listened to all of the shows, and I was able to be actively listening Wednesday and Thursday. And the thing that struck me today, I was listening to more of Inanna from Dale, his CD or MP3, and I've had two different downloads today. And by download, I mean kind of a whole body knowing that doesn't really translate well into words. But one of them had to do with his discussion about I am. And maybe you want to tap into that with Dale. Boy, is he getting it at deeper and deeper levels. And then as he does, and I get to listen to him, I get shivers and I get new insights. And one that came to me this morning as I was getting in the shower, I realized someone was upset with me for something I said or didn't say. And the download was, well, of course they don't like you. They don't like themselves. And I heard Magda's words from the show yesterday echo in my head that she was telling Michelle, contrary to what Michelle believes, if people really got to know Michelle, they would love her because they would see her as a reflection of themselves. So that's my offering for today. I'm anxious to hear Dale, and if he wants to talk a little about taking the name of the Lord thy God in vain, he does a wonderful segment on that in his lecture.
Cool. Well, let's ask the young man the question. How are you, Dale? And by the way, in order to get in touch with Dale, you can go to his website, which is www.daleallenhoffman.com, where he has all kinds of offering. He has a YouTube channel. You can watch just tons of information on the Aramaic. It's an amazing study. Dale, welcome to the show. How are you today, sir?
Thank you. I've been really on a creative high, especially for the past couple of weeks. This past week has just been amazing with writing, with the book that I'm working on, which really it's three books that I'm working on, just focused on the first. It's a three-book series about not only toning, which is an ancient practice that goes back thousands of years, toning the words of Jesus, but also going deeper into what some of those sounds, those original sounds and words meant, not even just 2,000 years ago, but even before that. And it's been incredible. Lately, kind of like, you know, for years, when I get up to speak, there's no anxiety, there's no worry. I just know that it's there. That voice is there. It was different with writing. Like, somehow I had to walk through some sort of veil that did not exist, in fact, that I knew didn't exist, but I still had to walk through that veil, and now have come in touch, you know, unlocked or opened up the writing voice, which is funny thing is it's the same voice as the speaking voice. It's just it's happening through my fingers instead of always out of my mouth, and it's been amazing. It's really popped open, and it keeps growing, and the book is the first draft will definitely be done by the end of this month. That's the goal that I've set, and I actually see myself pretty easily reaching that. And then as soon as that one's done, I'm going to be straight into the second book while I've got some other people in the publishing industry that's going to be kind of going over the first book, the first manuscript. And it's really exciting. It's been an amazing process of awakening and opening to it.
Cool. Well, certainly when you start channeling it through your fingers, a different part of the brain is involved, and it creates different dynamics than speaking. And so I understand that one.
Yeah, definitely.
So tell us about the I am that Dr. Tim has been listening to and sharing with us. Can you give us a little more insight into what you're discovering there from the Aramaic?
Well, sure. Absolutely. You know, as a matter of fact, I did a radio show for a station up in Cleveland last night, and there was a bunch of Unity ministers on the line, some really amazing, open people. And there was like a one had a comment of saying, you know, can you sort of put this into a little bit more of a layman's terms? And it was funny because I think the response I had kind of surprised her. I had said, I didn't say no, but what I said was, I said, you know, what that actually, that process is of feeling like you're not understanding, what that is it feels almost anti-intuitive, but in fact what that is anti-conditioning. It's not even anti-conditioning, but it gets down into the conditioning, into those belief systems that we have, and it starts to shake them loose. And when you hear truth, when you hear something that is, in fact, very high fidelity, what happens is anything in resonance with that light, that truth, is going to start shaking, and that stuff starts rising, and that creates that state of what we call basically confusion or disillusionment, whatever. And it's something that I experience if I sort of turn someone on to the Why Is This Happening to Me Again book or DVDs or the workshop. People go, you know, it's a little lit over my head. And I'm like, actually, no, what it actually is it's in your head. And that's the point of this, that you got to get beyond needing to understand, needing to comprehend, needing to have that intellectual completely be able to wrap your head around it and just do the process, put the pen to the paper and step into it. And that's what the I Am is really all about to me. I actually just wrote a little section in my book today about how I've had these the whole book is about sound, and it's about vibration, and it's about tones, and how we don't realize that, you know, the relationship between light, sound, tones, colors, etc. And I was talking about the fascination I have with the sound of a train whistles, and how and I sort of talked about all the nuances of the iron horse going back into the 19th century, etc. And then I made a comment there where I said something like, maybe in a previous incarnation I was, you know, whatever, a warrior, or maybe I was a snake oil salesman, or maybe I was one of the buffalo hunters, I don't know. But I said, you know, I really don't care either, because what I care about is who I am right now. I don't care about who I was, I care about who I am. And that I am is such a powerful statement that, especially in the teachings of Jesus, the modern teachings of Jesus, there is 0% chance that someone can understand them if they don't look at something coming from an Aramaic source, coming from the language that Jesus was actually speaking those in. When you put that phrase, the phrase sounds like inana in Aramaic. When you put that phrase into Greek, it's lost. It just comes out as simply I am, and that is like an implication of Jesus saying, I am the way and the truth and the life. I am the bread of life. I am the gate, which is a word that means portal. I am the light of the world. All those different phrases, especially in the Gospel of John. And I've said it on the show before, though, that inana word is actually not one word that means I am. It's actually two words that are pronounced together as one word. When I look down on the page, whether it's in the Kabbalist manuscript or in the Peshitta or any of the other texts, what I'll see on the page is basically two words, one word twice, actually, and that word is ana or ana or ina. Ina, ana, ana are sounds that sound actually goes back between 4,000 and 5,000 years. This is furthest back that we know of, back to the Akkadian language, which is the earliest of the Semitic languages that's been uncovered. And that ina, ana, ana sound means I. Now, in these instances where you see Jesus saying, I am the light of the world, I am the way and the truth and the life, it's something that a lot of Orthodox Christians get hung up on, looking and pointing at Jesus, not realizing that that would have been a concept that in his own language would have been completely foreign. If it was simply him talking about himself, I, Jesus, am the bread of life, I, Jesus, am the light of the world, what it would say on the page in Aramaic is just ana or ina, just the alep, nun, alep are the three letters, and that would mean I, Jesus, such as when he says things like I and the Father are one, ina wabi chad hanan, he was saying I, Jesus, and the one that you seek are actually one and the same, because there's not two, there's only one. and in the different places, like if he said, I am going to walk over there, or I am talking about himself, he would just say, Ana. Now, in those phrases, those ones that almost the entire Christian philosophy hangs on, it doesn't say Ana, as in I, Jesus. What it says is Ana, Ana. And when we see that word twice, it's actually profound to say it because I'm looking at two words on the page, but we pronounce it as Inanna. And what Inanna means is not I. Technically what that means is I, or the I within the I. As an example, it's not I, Jesus, but rather our highest awareness, our true self, our true being. You would say the analog self. And it's rather than the reflection in the mirror, the mask, the ego, the pain body, whatever, the belief systems, the ideology, it's not that that is the light of the world. It's actually the I at the center of the I. And it's amazing that if you just look at it in Aramaic, so many of these insights, they just pop and they change the message. I don't even want to say they change the message. They bring the message back to what was actually there in the first place. And it's incredible. The words, I've said it on this show a million times probably, the words that really succinctly put this across for me, besides the phrase that Yeshua said, I am in this world, though not of it, meaning I am a projection into the world, though I am not of this world of illusions and belief systems, etc. I see through it. But the phrase that really pops for me is that St. Francis phrase that I use all the time, St. Francis of Assisi, when he said, what you are looking for is what is looking. In other words, the peace, the presence, the love, the awareness, the light, the consciousness that we seek is actually our true nature. It's the I within the I, and it's not the pseudo-soul, as Yogananda would call it. He talked about being able to see through the illusion of the pseudo-soul and see from the real soul, and that's exactly what the Aramaic forgiveness process does. It's the realization that we don't have to comprehend or understand what the words mean. We don't have to comprehend or understand more information and ideologies and belief systems and pile them on top. But in fact, we just need to do that process of removing the bushel baskets from the light, putting the pen to the paper, walking the talk, and doing that forgiveness, removing the root of our suffering, removing the root of our illusions. That's the only thing, the only part of this process that's absolutely essential. Understanding it intellectually is simply a game that we play. Like people are, hold on, say that again. And it's like, no, I don't want to say it again. What I want you to do is just tune in to your natural state of being. Come back to the eye within the eye. Take your obsession out of your head. Come back to that center point of awareness. Yeshua called that the Talanach, or it was translated as the closet. Come back into the closet, back into the center, and come from there, and you'll be able to see this, but you're only going to be able to see it by living it, by putting it into action, because what you intellectually have that relationship with in your head, that sophisticated, complex ideology system, will never take the place of direct experience and true realization. And that's exactly what the Aramaic forgiveness process brings us to, or should I say through.
So you're saying hold a newborn child and you've got that center.
That's exactly
right. And if you live as that, then all is well.
Yes.
And it's interesting. We live, you bring up that word sophistry or sophisticated. And everybody wants to be so sophisticated, and yet nobody realizes, or rarely does a person realize the root of the word sophisticated. And what it was is it's a group of Greek philosophers, that the sophists, that used to travel around Greece and for big money teach the children of the wealthy how to lie and make the lies appear true so that they could govern and control others. Sophistry. Sophisticated means a lie, a fraud. And, you know, if you take a look around, the inmates are running the asylum. I mean, I'm looking out a window here in Las Vegas and looking at, I can see casinos where there are obviously millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of dollars spent on these monuments, and yet one shovel, not one pick, not one pen has been raised to produce wealth in order to create these monuments. It's all based in sophistry. It's all based in a fraud. You can get something for nothing. When the person who blows everything they've got on that game has lost contact with the center of their being. And when we go back to the center, everything is restored. It's the thing that Yeshua said, seek first this, then everything else is made unto you. And, of course, one of the things we go into in the workshop, Getting the Stress You Need, is that when one lives in that sophisticated state in sophistry, in the fraud and in the lie, and truth shows up, their stress goes up. And most people, when their stress goes up, want to take off the head of the object of attention, whoever it is that's delivering truth. You know, the John the Baptist story, where John the Baptist delivers truth to the king and queen, and the king and queen's stress goes up so high they literally take off his head, because John, unfortunately, at that point had not developed the skills of knowing when to duck and when to hold the mirror up to the information back to the king and queen that their stress was an internal process. And the mind of sophistry just wants more sophistry. It doesn't want to look at truth, because then it's going to have to handle and forgive everything inside of itself. So if you've ever found yourself in the position of truth shows up, your stress goes up, learn, instead of trying to get rid of the source of the information that shows you your blockage of truth and your stress, hook that increased stress to self-correction. And healing happens. And of course, as Gail's saying, the forgiveness process is the key. Cool.
It's one of those things that I can't, it's like I almost can't not be amused by when it's just that an amazing phenomenon that it's a very Western thing as well, where we seem to think that there's something else. There's like still some other key, there's some sort of thing, there's some sort of piece of information that's somehow going to pop, and all of a sudden we become instantly enlightened, when we don't realize it's not that we have to become more of something, but in fact, it's about removing the blocks that have us believing that we're not already everything, that we're not already the one. And that's coming through now. It's coming through. People, the young ones especially, that are coming to me, are just absolutely wide open, and they're like, you know, just give it to me exactly as it is on the page. Don't candy coat it. We can take it. We're ready to do this, and we're ready to go forward with it. And that's really inspiring to hear.
Well, and you know, you hear Yeshua saying, in order for you to live, you've got to die, which doesn't make any sense until you realize there are these two selves. There's the true self, the being that we are, the newborn. Hold the newborn, and you know the essence of your human life, and your world came in and taught you that you weren't that and helped you or forced you to create a different self to identify from. And that's the self that has to die. And then the misinterpretation, thinking this is about Yeshua rather than about the true self, where it says, as I become less, he becomes more. As the false self that I thought I was, the sophisticated self, the self based in hostility or fear, as that is forgiven, that is removed from my structure, then the truth of being, the obvious, awesome, active presence we were designed to function as, becomes more.
Yeah, because what we do, especially as children, is we escape into that smaller self. We escape into that. We almost, you can actually see it. Some of the people that that come to me for private sessions, either it's them or sometimes it's their children, you can see how they've actually created this whole fantasy land in their head to escape from the pain and the suffering and the things that were happening in their, well, what they think of as their real life, when in fact it was the pain and the suffering that wasn't real. And that sort of fantasy land that they've kind of created to escape from that has basically been the very thing that's kept them from the realization that the power that they hold in the fantasy is in fact their natural state of being, when it's a direct experience rather than just something that's observed through the ego's eye. And it's just amazing. I can't imagine being alive at another point in humanity and our history as a species, because right now so many things are happening and we're being able to see through so many things, and there's so many old structures that are dying off, though not without quite a heck of a fight. And amazingly, we're living at the most peaceful time in recorded human history, with the least amount of war going on at any particular time. Even with the things that the news wants to jam down our throats on a daily basis, we've never actually been. But that also doesn't mean that there's not tons and tons of work to do, because just because things are, let's say, copacetic and appear to be somehow simmering without boiling over, that doesn't necessarily mean there's peace. That word peace in Aramaic doesn't actually mean the absence of conflict. What that word shlama, shalom, of course, in Hebrew means is embracing the fullness of potential. That doesn't mean that there's necessarily, you know, no physical violence happening, but what it actually means is that I'm able to stand here looking into a mirror or face-to-face with one of my brothers or sisters and be able to have that experience from my center to their center without all those masks and illusions between, and I can be right here purely and wholly conscious with them exactly as they are. And homophobia does not fit into that, and racism does not fit into that. Ethnic cleansing and genocide does not fit into that. You're okay if you could just change this one little thing. That doesn't fit into it. It's about us being responsible for our own realities and stepping up to the plate again. It's not about understanding. It's about standing under. It's about being within that direct experience of the realization. Nothing else will take the place of that.
And of course, the way to get there is not by getting something else, by doing something else. You know, the powers that be in the world want us to be doing, 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 because they're going to get a percentage off the top. You'll notice the whole game is set up to do that, where when one stands as a human being in the truth of who they are, the requirement to be there is to remove what doesn't belong. And sadly enough, I've been doing some research, and there are actually, on planet Earth today, are 34 wars going on, being fought as we speak at this moment. And we need to wake up to the fact that those external wars are reflections of the internal wars that we fight with ourselves, that they're energetic analogs that are at cause. The internal dynamic is at cause of the external. And when we can take the tool of forgiveness to people, just, you know, a few people in each of these cultures where these wars are going on, then an energetic dynamic is going to start to shift within those cultures, and healing of those internal dynamics will happen. And as that happens, as above, so below, then the external wars will tend to disappear. And that's one of the reasons why, for me, it's about inspiring people to take the tools, to share the tools, to use the tools, so that we can shift the game on planet Earth back to human life. You know, we're in a game where human life is almost the true active presence of love has almost disappeared, and all we have to do is uncover it, as you say, Dale, to take the bushel baskets off. And it is the tool of first century Aramaic forgiveness that removes the bushel baskets.
You know, Tim was actually saying something about, he was talking about saying the Lord's name in vain, and we've completely lost the meaning of that one. With that word, that word anana, anything you put after that, basically to boil it down just as a little bit of a base, essentially in the Hebrew Torah, Moses was asking in Exodus, basically, what is your name, or who shall I say sent me, what's the name of God? And he hears back a shar, in the best Charlton Heston voice coming from that bush, which in Hebrew, there's lots of ways you can translate that. I am becoming, that I am becoming, I am, that I am, I shall be, that I shall be. Essentially, it means I am. And so essentially, in those Hebraic teachings, what's the name of God? I am. And then the question I often ask people is, who's God? And people go, I am. And it's like, a light bulb goes off. Some people's faces turn red. Some people's faces light up with a light. Some people turn red because of all that guilt and shame that's in there. How could I be? And I start saying, you know, what is it you're putting after those words, I am? You saying I am angry, or I am not angry, I am scared, I am poor, I am helpless. Anything that comes after those those words, I am, in the English language that has any root within that digital distortion, the sampling of something like poverty, fear, hostility, whatever that may be. And when we bring that, by saying I am, we're trying to bring that back to what in the Matrix was called Zion in the Matrix movies. Zion is actually a Hebrew and Aramaic letter that means to project. And what they were trying to do is all the digital guys, the Joseph Smiths, or Agent Smith was trying to get to the center. They was trying to get to Zion to try to get back to the center of all being, knowing that if they could get the digital projection back to the center and start projecting from that, that the real world would then disappear and it would become just a digital refraction, a digital sample of what's real. Of course, in reality, that's not quite possible, but yet it's exactly that realization that when taking the Lord's name in vain is not saying Jeezy Creezy, it's not saying GD. Those are just labels. What taking the Lord's name in vain is saying that there's something about you that's somehow not essentially already whole and complete. And the aspect that I bring into that is the words of Ernest Holmes, where he said, there's nothing to heal, only truth to be revealed. It's our belief in the fact that something's broken that's made us broken in the first place. Because, in fact, the system works exactly perfectly. It gives you exactly what you believe yourself to be, no more and no less. It gives it to you exactly. And then, of course, we complain about our life because it looks like everything's falling apart when our core belief there, our BS there, is that life is falling apart. So, of course, we start to birth again from that. And if we could just be able to take that responsibility, to be able to go in and start removing the lid off of Pandora's box and start looking in there and actually do the work and stop just yakking about it, but doing it. This world could transform in the matter of less than 24 hours if each of us would just get into that, take care of our own neck of the woods. It's not out there. It's exactly like you said. It's not about, you know, those wars out there are projections of what is going on inside. And we got to take care of that. It's, you can even look at those three extremes of Islam, Christianity, and Judaism as the three most intentionally warring factions on the face of this earth. And the insane thing is, literally insane, is that they're literally three qualities or aspects of one singular tree of life, with Judaism being the roots, that Christianity is that which basically witnesses, evangelizes, whatever they want to call it, and takes it out and creates the leaf and creates those branches. And then true Islam is that fruit that falls in absolute submission back down into that fertile earth to re-nutrify the system, the roots, and the soil, and start the whole process over again. And at their extremes, they're also the three most extreme, insane, disgusting, judgmental, hatred-filled ideologies that we may have ever seen in humankind in the last 2,000 years. But, of course, everyone's pointing at the other one saying, it's not me, it's you. It's all about you, 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 you. We've got the truth, you don't. You don't know anything about the truth. And in the extremes of Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, it's people who don't actually know those original Aramaic teachings of Yeshua. They don't know how to go in, or even don't want to know them. They don't know how to go in there and remove that root and realize that if I am in some sort of hate of state of hostility or fear, that there's one of three options here. Number one, my philosophy is translated improperly. That's number one. Number two, I don't understand the philosophy. Or number three, it was wrong to begin with. The fact of the matter is, if we're able to lash out, we can call it terrorism, we can call it jihad, we can call it whatever we want to call it, and we can say, talk about how completely righteous and completely God-given and all that junk that goes with that, if we're lashing out in hostility and fear, then our philosophy is junk. It's junk. It's just more BS in the system. If we could just get back to owning that, you know, it would transform everything overnight.
Yeah, Crusade's the same thing. You know, there's an interesting place where, because of the placement of punctuation, this message of wholeness of Yeshua is lost one more time through the Greek translations. And if we were to tap into the idea that the goal of the work, Paul at one point said, was to be of like mind with Christ, in that mind of wholeness, in that mind of the I am. And there's a point where he's talking to Peter, and he says to Peter, Peter, who do you say that I am? And Peter says, surely thou art the Christ. Now, if you listen to the Greek translation of what Yeshua says back to him, you'd think that Peter's really got to be pretty dumb because he has to be reminded of what his name is. We're told that it says, thou art Peter. Like Peter didn't know that. And he needs to be reminded. Thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. We're told by the Greeks it says. But if you put the emphasis properly, what you hear is Yeshua referring to Peter's wholeness. And he's not telling Peter his name, thou art Peter. He says, in response to Peter's response to him, thou art surely the Christ, Yeshua says, thou art Peter, thou art wholeness. And upon this rock, the wholeness of each people who engage in this, I will build my church. And when you recognize that, when you claim that wholeness and you're willing to forgive, remove everything that expresses through you or that has expressed through you or that has come from your genetics that doesn't belong, then thou art that wholeness. Thou art that active presence of love that transforms the world in the twinkling of an eye. That's what we're looking to establish in the world.
We forgot that somehow, or maybe we just weren't told in the beginning, or at least in the translations of the translations of the translations.
Well, there's a brainwash, and
yeah.
The brainwash is it doesn't serve kings to have people who function as whole beings, because whole beings won't go make war, whole beings won't slaughter, whole beings won't steal other people's properties for kings. And, you know, that's the game that's being played. You look at that story in Samuel where, you know, Samuel is a just judge, and they say that his sons who were about to take over, did not walk in his ways, so they want Samuel to give them a king like the other nations. And the Creator says to Samuel, well, you know, if that's what they want, give it to them, but warn them. And you can go back and read, I believe it's either Samuel 1:8 or 8:1, I forget which it is, but check those out. And you see the whole list of things that are going to happen if you allow a king to rule you. And it doesn't matter whether it's King George or King Obama or whoever, if you allow a king to rule you, then here's what's going to happen. And what it says, your maidservants and your menservants are going to belong to the king. And he's going to take the best of your crops, and he's going to make soldiers out of your men. And he's going to go kill people with those soldiers and steal their property. That's what kings do. You know, you look at the history of kings, and they hold up these, you know, icons of these wonderful kings, and their money that was made on dope, their money was made on heroin and insanity. It's time for us to step back to and remove the hostility and fear that we've been brainwashed with and stand in the I am as true human beings, the place we started out. And anytime you forget that, just hold a newborn child. And I find that a great measuring stick for behavior is, if I can imagine a newborn doing or saying what I'm about to do or say, it's probably a good thing to do. If I can't imagine the newborn doing or saying what I'm about to do or say, then I probably should refrain. Because we've been brainwashed with all kinds of things that the newborn has not yet been brainwashed with.
Definitely.
As Yeshua speaks about, be as a child, go back to that newborn state. Go ahead, Dale.
I was just going to say briefly, that brings up the quote of Sinclair Lewis when he says, when fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross. Well, nice, huh? Wrap it all together. The politics, the economy, and the religion. Wrap it all under one umbrella, just like at the Council of Nicaea and many times since. Actually, many times before that even. Hook them by the emotion. Hook them by the stuff that they don't know how to process because you removed that processor from their grasp. You don't allow them to see that anymore. And you've got them.
So our task is to restore.
Yes.
The understanding of first century Aramaic forgiveness to every mind, heart, and being on the planet so that they can stand in their newborn state. And when you turn your voice to your spouse, to your child, to the guy next door, in some form of hostility or fear, stop. Remember the truth of who you are. Forgive that voice in you and return to the I am, return to the wholeness. Tim, do you have a thought to share with us?
I was just looking up the Samuel, and when you search for 8:1, it gives you just the part where it says they asked for a king to lead them.
So just, if you would, if you've got that there, I don't have it available at this moment, but go ahead and just read the next few lines.
Well, I don't really want to do that because what pulled up was the New International Version, and I don't want Dale to get sick. So
I won't. I'll listen to that one.
He'll breathe. He'll breathe. But it fairly accurately reflects what the Creator's saying is going to happen if we accept the King, and it's, you know, what's happening in the world today.
Yeah, he said go back.
And this is in fact,
that,
you know, what, 3,000 years ago.
Yeah, he said go ahead, you can do that, but tell them that he will take your sons and make them run in front of his chariots and horses, and he will take your daughters and make them perfumers and cooks and bakers, and he will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants, and he will take a tenth of your grain and your vintage and give it to his officials and attendants, your male and female servants and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his slaves. And when that day comes, you'll cry out for relief from the king you have chosen, but the Lord will not answer you in that day.
I rest my case. I mean, if that isn't a prediction of exactly what's happening. I mean, you know, recently we saw some stuff about, you know, people who had their little homes, and, of course, they weren't a big tax base, so what did the king say? We're going to come in through eminent domain. We're going to take this land, and we're going to give it to one of our corporations. We're going to kick you off. We're going to tear your house down. We're going to throw your family out, and we're going to put this corporation in that'll give me money. I mean, if that isn't exactly what was being said 3,000 years ago, I don't know what is. So, Jeannie just informed me we've got a couple of callers. Let's take a caller and see what they've got to say. Jeannie?
The first one is area code 727. You're on the air. Who do we have?
727, you're on the air. Welcome. Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
Okay.
727, are you with me?
Okay. The next one is area code 541. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Julie from Ashland, Oregon. Hi, both of you, all of you, three, four of you, and the whole listening audience. I want to share like a parable kind of thing. Think of a riptide, which is really a rip current, but they're called riptides, and they basically are a perpendicular stream and flow of the water from the shoreline out to sea, and they go about 5 miles an hour. And you can get caught in one thinking it's a calm area of the ocean. It's a break in the wave action as normal waves come in, and it looks choppy. And it's kind of like the mainstream current, if you think of it that way, just that it's so easy to get swept and caught in it. And most people don't understand it, and they try to swim straight for shore, and that wears them out because the force is too great, and they never make it. And if you ask for help and use the tools and learn to swim across the current, which is only about 30 feet wide, and you swim parallel to the ocean shore, to shoreline, you will get out of it. Even if it's moved you out towards sea, you'll still move out of that force, and then you go towards shore and you get your feet on firm ground and you live as a new being in a new world. And I think that each one of us has to do that work. And I'm talking to myself, and that's why I realized this. It is possible. We ask for help, and this is the help. If we give our will to it and do it, we are carried into a different way of living. So I just wanted to share that. Maybe that would, you know, be useful for people.
Great insight. Yes, that's awesome. If you think of the hostility and fear-based mind that we just get sucked into, that's the riptide. That's an excellent analogy for exactly what happens out of this non-being mind. And people who struggle against it just add more energy to it. In fact, you go back to Yeshu says, resist not evil. If you fight the current, it's got you. But if you simply stop, breathe, and forgive, everything starts to shift and change.
Yeah. Also,
really, thank you.
We don't need to worry about the current itself, because all of that, that's the removal process. I mean, that's being removed. Don't worry about it. Let it keep going out and be what it thinks it is. That came from a dream I actually had when I asked for help. And in the dream, I asked for help, and that was when the intuition was reminded to me, swim across the current. And so I had to have an act of will to do that. And then the memory came back, my knowledge of what riptides are and how to get back to shore. So I moved out of the current and went to shore, and I received, you know, further help once I was on shore. And other people made it to safety too. The ones who listened, you know, asked for help, listened, and followed instructions. And it was reliant upon each person to do their own work rather than me to go save them. That was another lesson for me, not to worry about it all, but to do what I know I can do, and others who listen know what they can do.
Nice. Cool.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Julie. That's awesome.
You're welcome. Thanks.
All right. So, have a blessed day.
That gets me thinking of the analogy that, you know, it doesn't work to walk around the desert. You've got to go through it. That's the whole point of the whole thing. And talking about it is not walking through it. Walking through it is actually the process. Like I said, it's putting the pen to the paper, and it's taking those steps and actually going 100% into it and just doing it and try it out for a while. And at first it looks like everything's falling apart because you're accessing things that you haven't looked at in a long, long time, if ever. But you keep going and you keep going and you keep going, and the load gets a little bit lighter, and further down the road you start realizing, hey, wait a second, things aren't as bad as they used to be. You know, you look back on worksheets you did 10 years ago, it's like, oh, how could that be a big deal? That would be nothing to me today. And that's what happens when you do the work.
Absolutely. Well, Jeannie, do we have 727 back with us yet?
They're still on there, so let me turn them back on and see if 727, can you hear us? 727, you're on the air. I guess not.
I guess we've lost them. So, Dale, if you were to come up with one of the biggest gems from the Aramaic that you haven't shared with us to date, what would it be?
Wow. Put me on the spot, why don't you?
Hey, well, let's go for it.
Trying to think. There's so many little chestnuts. You know, one of the things actually that, and it's not that it's not a subject I haven't talked about. Who is it that he's talking with? There's a phrase. It's in the Gospel of John. Yeshua says, he's talking with someone, and he says essentially, I believe it's at the well. It's the woman at the well that people say that it's Mary Magdalene, which, of course, there's no proof that actually says that. And she talks about waiting for the Messiah. And his response is that it is I that is speaking with you. And what's interesting is in Aramaic, and this is something that I've seen, you know, I've seen for probably a decade and a half, but it didn't pop until about 2 weeks ago, where I went, hold on, hold the phone, and I'm looking at the down there because I'm digging through, finding all the Anna places in the teachings of Jesus, and I'm separating the I am Jesuses from the I within the I, and it doesn't say actually in Aramaic, it is I who is speaking with you. Who says it is I anyway? What it actually says is Anna is speaking with you. In other words, it's not me, Jesus, the physical man or a physical Messiah, but that Messiah, the Mashiach, the Mashiach, is actually the I within the I. It's not me, the human, that's speaking with you. It's the one speaking through me as a human. And it was one of those things, it's one of those phrases that I've looked at for ever and ever and ever and just like flew right through it, even looking at it in Aramaic. And then all of a sudden I went, hold on a second. And what was really unique is that I didn't really talk about it too much with anyone. And then later that night, one of my best friends, Mike Ormond, who's, you know, been, you know, listened in on this show a bazillion times and called in a bunch, he had popped in on the same one, like the same day. He was like, hold on a second. He was looking at one of his Aramaic Bibles and ran into it himself, like, hold on a second. It doesn't say it is I. It says it's the I within the I that's speaking with you. Think about that. That's a big difference between saying, you know, it's the I inside of the I, as opposed to it's just me, Jesus. And all that power's been giving to a man that was telling us the whole time that the power was within us. And I'm just saying that's a huge distinction.
It is a huge distinction. You can easily verify it. It even shines through in the Greek translations where he says, you want somebody who will come in their own name, their individual ego-centered name. He said, I come not in my own name. But that's what you want. And when that one comes, you'll worship them. And they made, even though he said that's not what it's about, they made him that. And
yeah,
it's just, you know, crazy at its core.
And,
he
you know, what's interesting
is to connect us.
When he says, it's, you know, I don't come in my own name, that word name is Shem there, and what Shem means is essentially not even name as in Jesus. The way I explain Shem all the time with people is, like when you hear pray in my name is another one, John 15:16. It doesn't mean name as in Dale, Jesus, John, Joe, Michael, whatever it may be. What that means is that if I say the name Ray Charles as an example, no one is just seeing the letters R-A-Y-C-H-A-R-L-E-S. It's not like a robot in the head, but we're experienced. We can hear his voice, and we see that huge, awesome smile that Ray had. You know, you see him at the piano and just that ball of light that he was. And that's what Shem means. It means the overall energy, essence, vibration of my being. And that's Jesus, or Yeshua, saying there, look, it's not my being. This is the being of the one that's coming through, that's speaking through me. It's not my pseudo-soul. It's not the mask. It's not the hypocrite. It's not the man that stands before you, but it's my center, which is your center. And that goes back to the story with Peter. Like, you know, who is it that they're saying I am? It's not about me, Jesus, the man. It's about what's within the center, and my center is your center. And if we could just get that, you'll never see that. There's just no way to see that in Koine Greek. You can't translate certain phrases, and that's one of those phrases.
For sure. Yeah, if one doesn't have the brain cells or the experience for something, it obviously can't be in the language. And so to take the deep, deep flower that was developed by the Aramaic Yeshua in his Aramaic language, and then to try to translate it with a violence-oriented language like Greek and thought structure like Greek. And if you ever question the violence, if you ever want to look at whether that's accurate or not, and you want to see if perhaps that language could possibly reflect this gentle, active presence of love and the teaching for reclaiming that, just go sit in the movie 300. Take worksheets with you, be ready to breathe, and watch how many thousands of years ago the viciousness and the violence that was forced onto a child to make of them a hero. And the Greeks try to hold Yeshua up as that same hero rather than understand the flower that he delivered and the tools that he delivered to take us back to the essence of our true nature in our true relationship later. But you look at that movie 300, you know, I always, when I think about it, the scene where there's this little boy, the guy who's going to be molded into the hero, and he's in his mother's home and in his mother's arms, and he's now at the age where they're going to rip him away from her and take him off to train him to be a hero. And in the next scene, you see him, and I don't remember whether it's him having his face smashed in or he's being trained to smash another young boy's face into the dirt to literally shatter another being in order to be made into a hero. And that's the mindset that has ruled the Greek culture, and you just can't bring the vibration of what Yeshua taught through that mindset. You know, there's a certain mindset, a certain attitude of mind, and if you go back to the Aramaic, Yeshua speaks of an attitude of mind called rachma that needs to be established within us before we can comprehend anything. And in a culture as based in viciousness and violence as the Greek culture is, you just can't go there. It's just not possible. You've got to, you know, sort through and go back to the original man and the original words and the original ideas to recognize that the truth of human life is this awesome presence of love. Verify it by holding a newborn child. The expertise of the Greek mind and Greek philosophy was to destroy that and send one into heroism. And you look at how that's governed our world, and still does. And it's time for us to change. I mean, how, in the name of someone who says, love those who hate you, do good to those who despitefully use you, can you possibly pick up a rifle and go to war? It's impossible. But under the Greek game, you're now a hero because you can pick up a gun and go kill somebody. But you're sure not a Christian. You're sure not oriented toward the man named Yeshua and what he taught. In fact, perhaps there was only ever one of them, and he lived 2,000 years ago. And because he was such a threat to the power structure of the world, they had to get rid of him. We're here to restore the actual understanding of the actual words of the actual man, and to give people support in uncovering the truth of who they are and living as this awesome active presence of love that we were designed to live as.
Of course.
You can tap into just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of material, videos, audios, written material on our website, www.whyagain.org. We are in Las Vegas, Nevada for another week. Doing workshops. DaleAllenHoffman.com is Dale's site. Dale, we've got about 45 seconds left. Do you have any events to announce that people can tap into? Or I'm sure they can get them on your site. But
yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll be in the next week, I'll be in Minneapolis. I'll be at several places in North Minneapolis and South Minneapolis. I'll be visiting Dr. Tim at his support group in a couple of Tuesdays away in Woodstock, Illinois. I've got in May, Aramaic Secrets of Mary Magdalene and Awakening the Divine Feminine within the original Yeshua teachings weekend retreat that I'm doing here in Asheville. There's a couple of spaces that are open on that because we had a couple people that had to cancel for some family issues. Other than that, my website's the best place to find everything out about what I'm doing.
Awesome. And we'll look forward to seeing if we can get something together in June that we can do together in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah, I tried a couple different – the Light Center's already booked. Mountain Light Sanctuary's already booked. So I'm still kind of looking around for a place that's open that weekend or week.
Okay. Sounds good, sir. Well, we're going to have to run. Thank you, Dale. Your input and insight is awesome and precious. And everybody – give the world the best gift you can possibly give them. Give them the best year yet of your eternal life. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.